නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතු වරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ කතංච භික්ඛවේ භික්ඛූ වේදනාසු වේදනානුපස්සී විහෙරති ඉද භික්ඛවේ භික්ඛූ සුඛං වේදනං වේදියමානෝ සුඛං වේදනං වේදයාමි ති පජානාති ති Yeah, venerable, Dhamma friends, now we are reaching the fifth day in our retreat. Accordingly, this is the fifth Dhamma talk, and we have taken the particular sutta known as Sedaka Sutta from the Anguttara Nikaya as the common topic for this series of talks, and it is emphasizing if anyone wish to have one's own well-being or one's own security, he or she must take care about the mindfulness or diligence, and then that very diligence and the mindfulness is assure one's own well-being and one's own welfare and the security. Along that, we try to understand the way the Buddha explained how one can be diligent, how one can be not to be negligent towards the moral restrainment, concentration restrainment, and the wisdom restrainment. Early 3 days we briefly tackled about the restrainment regarding the morality and the concentration, and yesterday we begin to deal with the restatement regarding the wisdom, and they are how one can be mindful or diligent on what is one's own body or corporeality, and they are, as far as the meditation instructions are concerned, one will go to a appropriate place, namely something like a meditation center like we have gathered here, or appropriate place, and then focus the attention on this materiality. And as far as the techniques are concerned, the Buddhist texts are commonly presenting the mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath. Sometimes as an alternative, you can do the mindfulness on the rising and falling of the abdomen, or while you are doing the walking meditation, the touch of the right leg and the left leg on the ground. This is what, according to the literature, known as the mindfulness on the body, mindfulness on the corporeality. So in the yesterday's talk, we took this mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath as the example, and if someone is managing to keep the breath, keep the in-breath and out-breath face-to-face for a fairly long time, then he or she is bound to see the sensational transference or evolution of that very same object, the in-breath and the out-breath, chronological order according to the time series. So if the macroclimate or atmosphere as well as internal alignments are okay, what basically happens is the mind, the body, the breath becomes slowly, slowly calm down. This is the thing happen when the most conducive conditions are being provided. So, supposing that we agree and we go ahead from the situation, where as far as you are keeping the awareness or mindfulness on the in-breath and out-breath, if it is calming down, the gross in-breath and out-breath will slowly become subtle. And one, when it is calming down, our mental attitude or our appreciation of the same can take different modes. What is the best prescribed by the instructions are, when it is calming down, you have to facilitate it to be with the breath face to face, knowing this is as a good sign. Then only you can go to the subtlest areas of the breath or the most calm down states of the breathing. When that is happening, our perception and our things are undergoing changes, sometimes unexpected things going to happen. For example, our mind is happy and always wish to be with gross sensations. When they were, as far as they become subtler, our precision or discriminative knowledge sometimes loses its interest. That is why more longer time you see, even though the mindfulness keep in the track with the in-breath and out-breath, there may be some difficulties in maintenance due to our boredom and the monotonous situation. Sometimes we feel sleepy, or sometimes mind tend to entertain doubts, or sometimes tends to do fast, forced breathing. This kind of thing happens. So there is no other way other than going with preparedness. If it is so, one will manage to go deep layers despite these difficulties. When you go there, a number of things can happen, not for each and everyone. If I am to summarize, from this materiality, namely hardness and softness, heat and cold, moving and stability, and cohesiveness and fluidity, these kind of things, when become thin and thin, subtle, ultimately you go to a place where there is no such hints. You, as if you go to the space. When that is happening, your perception, whether you are with the touch of the breath or not, going to create a problem regarding your towards the doubting, as well as the internal external relationships also going to change. As far as the gross breathing is concerned, you can see you are with the touch of the breath, but with the diligence and the vigilance and the mindfulness, when the breath becomes subtler and subtler, you are losing the boundary as to in and out. So this is also for some people becoming a challenge. And equally, sometimes you are bound to feel some light perception and lightness. So this is what most people consider as a good thing, but anyway, this come and go, and therefore that is also making kind of an uncertainty in the mind. And as the mind becomes centralized, go towards the center, it becomes getting aloof from the visual objects, sounds, tastes, smells and touching, you feel kind of a vacuum or get a distance from these sensuous external objects. So in the case of lack of these senses, mind tend to project themselves from your past memories. So therefore sometimes you may see as if you are in a dream world, or you may see the devoted Buddhists sometimes see your Buddha images, temples and all the kind of thing. And whatever may be most acquainted things will be projecting, and then you get sway, getting out of the situation, and you don't know whether you are in imagination or hallucination or whether it is a reality. So under such circumstance also, many doubts whether you are in the proper track or not. And when these are happening, there is no universal single answer to get out of that. This you can cut through only by trial and error. And more and more you go deeper, you feel you are becoming more and more aloofed from your primary object, namely the in-breath and out-breath, sometimes the touching point, and there is no as such difference between the in-breath and out-breath. So therefore this is a real test as to see whether you have a real faith or belief on what you are doing. And the other one is, whenever you have any kind of self-accusation regarding your moral disintegration, these things will be amplified under these circumstances. Some people, those who have inferiority complex or superiority complex, like the mental situation, they also become aggravated. So therefore, this is a kind of a test as to see whether you are qualified enough physically and mentally to go into the next stage, namely the mentality or non-materialistic sphere. So when that situation happens, one has to be really ready for that and be aware, rather in a choiceless manner or choiceless awareness, then only one can understand whether one's progress is taking place or not. Therefore, whenever under such uncertain situation happens, unless otherwise you have a resolute faith, often you tend to come back and to believe or trust upon the gross breath rather than the subtle situation. Those who are ready to exert more or kind of a aimed kind of energy will take it as a challenge and go forward. Other people, those who are hesitant and lack of energy, definitely will come back. And the mindfulness itself also demanding a higher degree mindfulness, that is the continuity of the mindfulness from gross to the subtlety. There should have a continuity. If there are discontinuation, the doubts can set in. So mindfulness also has to reinforce, and that is the place where concentration taking the higher grade, definitely there are the type of concentration you need is inside bias concentration, not the conventional samatha concentration. It is supporting the inquiring mind or inquisitive nature as to see the balance under this uncertain situation. And the wisdom also, it highly taxed. You have to go for this kind of self-confidence, and based upon your own past trial and error memory, and not believing external wisdom, but based upon your meditative experience or direct touch. So therefore, this is a kind of a threshold, kind of a crucial stage in one's meditation. So at that time, if someone is under the guidance of a teacher, it's better. And if he or she can have acquaintance with other advanced meditators, better chance to select the correct path. Otherwise, a lot of other mishaps can take place. So therefore, this area is somewhat critical, where that the mind is passing the materiality and preparing to go to the mentality. It is like a spacecraft is leaving the gravitational area of the Earth and going to go to the space. And there are no one can teach you for these astronauts. They themselves have to believe upon their own experience, because the other scientists in the control room, they know only the gravitational sphere. They can't give any advices towards this non-gravitational space. Likewise, we are for the first time going to experience the non-materialistic kind of feelings still being in the fully materialistic body. So this is why it is called the transitional period. So unless otherwise one can master this area, I would say in each and every city, very difficult to have a hope regarding going towards the feelings or the first stage of the mentality. So therefore it is like an acid test put in each day as to test whether you have a real resolute faith. You have enough courageous energy, continuity of the mindfulness, the concentration which can work in momentary conditions, and the wisdom which is demanding high risk. So this is how all your faculties come into the higher degree form, and then whenever they come into alignment, they come adjusted, then feel like going further. When you go further, that means you understand the meditation is now in the correct path. Even though you can't feel the in-breath versus out-breath, you feel kind of a continuum, that is to prove the being, that indicate further as a special support, you are not sleepy or dream, or you are not fainted, you are not unconscious. And that is how the change it takes place from the known to unknown. So when it is happening, those who have the weaknesses feel like going back home. But those who have the courageous energy feel like a challenge and go forward. Even then, that going forward must have to happen in a slow manner. Day by day, you are increasing the time period of this unknown area, and therefore some masters ask you as to you to understand what is the last drop, or the last moment you feel the materiality and threshold where you go into this immaterial sphere. And after a while again you will come back to the materialistic kind of experience. And again you feel little subtle breath, sometimes the touching point, sometimes even the difference between the in-breath and out-breath. And when you are focusing again on that, within a short period, again it will be off, go off, again you can go into this non-material sphere. Likewise, within one sitting, you may experience number of cycles of known to unknown, the gross to the subtlety, materiality to the non-materiality kind of situation. So there are set patterns, but you have to find out your own one, and ultimately your novelty or your shaky mind will be mature enough to undertake that kind of thing. Under such circumstances, you can be there for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, right? Long period. And mind is unshaken. Something like tightrope walking, or as if you're training a push pipe, at the beginning a lot of shaky and wavy kind of balance, ultimately you learn how to balance the bike. And there you feel like riding. Here also that can happen. So I am again repeating, this has to happen thousand and one times, someone to gain the ground, to get the balance, to get the equilibrium in this non-materialistic kind of experience. When that happens, the whole meditation becomes just mind-made. Mano bhubbangama dhamma, mano setta manomya. Because you can't feel as if the body is there. Sometimes it appears like a part and partial exist, others have dissolved life. And you feel sometimes away from your body, you can look at your body back. So when these things happen, often what happens is the rational mind going to open the eyes and see, but it is rather disturbing your concentration. So one day you become mature, you can go into this sphere whereby you are finding the equilibrium. You are finding the balance in this non-materialistic kind of experience. As I mentioned yesterday, it is some people call as inner space. Sometimes they call this as a whole body experience. So when that comes, everything appears like mind-made. But only your past memory and the continuity of the mindfulness will prove it is not a hallucination, it is not a completely a dream that you can continue. When that happens, beginning of that experience, sometimes you feel, due to your hilarious feeling, you are bound to feel the joy, the joy or gladness. Sometimes it go up to the rapture and happiness. So when that happens, still, just like in the threat beforehand, now you are in the positive side, that also sometimes you tend to overestimate, thinking that in future, each and every time you will win the game. And that is ultimately again help. Again, I mean rather dislodge you from the meditation, and sometimes you going to feel kind of a mindfulness appear like continuous. Really, you had so much of threats like thinking, bodily pains and sounds and kind of thing, but you feel now you are just like in a cage of mindfulness. Right round there are some inner thoughts. Right round there are some bodily sensations and environmental sounds, but you really feel you are unshaken. They are not addressing you, they are not unbearable, and these thoughts have no any content. So your mindfulness also sometimes appears like a continuous, and sometimes there is a tendency to overestimate them. And the kind of equilibrium also happens. You feel, as far as I am going to give the attention to this whole peripheral thing, mind becomes shaky and frills and waves going to happen. But instead, if you are, if you know how to find the balance in between, they become immaterial. They become, their impact will be reduced. So therefore, the kind of equanimity also going to happen. So all these qualities highlight at a time in a higher degree. So therefore yogi or the practitioner is tend to overestimate or sometimes underestimate. So therefore by trial and error again and again you are going to understand slowly the mind, how it works in terms of feelings and perception. And whenever our mind is untrained, we are experiencing, for so to say, some pleasure that has to come to a certain grossness for us to feel the pleasure. But when you get the proper training of kaya anupassana, the process respect to the materiality, now your mind becomes so tuned, so efficient. Sometimes you can see the arising part of or beginning signs of your oncoming pleasure. Equally, the beginning of your oncoming pain. So that is the one area after passing this meditative sphere, you are bound to get this starting point, the setting up of pain and the pleasure. So there are, if you are sharp enough, following the proper instructions, you can see as and when the pleasure comes, you can understand this is the pleasure. But if you keen enough to observe this pleasure in a choiceless manner, as and when the pleasure goes off, there's a sediment of sadness. So there is nothing pleasure, there is nothing, no events or no phenomena in the world, it's completely pleasurable or completely painful. As and when the pain arises, you feel it's of course unbearable, you are disheartened. But when the pain disappears, there's a chance for the pleasure. But if you are not sharp enough to see the arising part of the pain or arising part of the pleasure, that means feeling, your sharpness is not to see the waning of part of the pain and the pleasure. So that is the point where you can understand each and every pain and the pleasure have bimodal shape, that incoming pleasure is pleasurable, but when it is goes off, it leaves some kind of a pain. The oncoming pain is painful, but when it is going, there is a kind of a pleasure. So therefore, unless otherwise you see the beginning, the middle and the end of the pain, beginning, the middle of the end of the pleasure, you will only decide by the face. You will consider pain and painful and pleasurable because you have no patience, you have no consistency in observation, the backside of the pain and the backside of the pleasure. That is what, before come up to this immaterial side, you have to have a proper understanding of the beginning, the middle and the end of in-breath and out-breath. Then only this training could be applied to the immaterial things like pleasure and the pain. So, in order to highlight this, I would like to give a cite quotation from the Majjhima Nikaya, Chula Vedala Sutta. The way Visakha is the bhikkhu or monk questioning his ex-wife. Now she is the nun, the bhikkhuni, and she is fully enlightened. As to see whether she has got real dharma, the ex-husband is questioning, oh dear sister, noble sister, what is the pain and pleasure of pleasurable feeling? Then the answer is, oh dear Visakha, when the pleasurable feeling is coming, it is pleasurable, when it is going, it is painful. But you are deluded because of your undermined tendency of desire to the desirable feeling. So therefore, as far as you have this underlying tendency, as and when the pleasurable feeling happens, you have a positive feeling, but you miss to see when it is leaving with pain. And then the question other side is, what is the pain and pleasure of the painful feeling? Then when we give the example, as far as the painful feeling is coming in, we suffer. But if you are patient enough to see when the pleasurable feeling is going off, there's a kind of a pleasure comes, but unless otherwise you are sharp enough, you will never note it. That is because you have a hateful underlying tendency towards the painful feeling. These you can, of course you can listen, you can deduce, but you will never believe unless otherwise you go there and experience it. And your listening and deductive knowledge is of course helpful, but unless otherwise you master your in-breath and out-breath, that materiality, you will never go into this sphere of experiencing of immaterial pleasure, immaterial part of your meditation. So therefore, when you go there, you must have a certain amount of theory knowledge, you must have a certain amount of deductive knowledge and preparedness, then only you can see each and every pain and pleasure as good and the bad. But the most tricky part is the next. The next question is, oh dear, when the noble sister, what is the pain and pleasure of no pain, no pleasure kind of situation? Oh, I would repeat it. What is the pain and pleasure of neutral feeling? Then this the sister Dhammadina says, oh dear Visakha, when the no pain, no pleasure situation happen, if you know it is a pleasure, if you do not know, it's a pain. Why I am bringing this point up is two points. One thing, after you mastering the kaya kayanupassi, the dwelling upon the body, be mindful upon the body and body upon body, next challenge coming is, next meditation part is to be aware of these feelings. The second thing is, if you do not understand this at least in the theoretical and deductive knowledge, you only see in the day-to-day life the pain and pleasure, never you note this neutral feeling. Out of this pain and pleasure also, you are always complaining about the pain and you are in the pleasure-seeking game. So therefore you are blindfolded to at least note the no pain, no pleasure situation, or neutral situation. But once you tasted this under your very nose, direct experience, you may find 95% of your time you are in no pain, no pleasure situation. The pain and pleasure as such will not account for at least 5% of your time. But we are so obsessed, so possessed with this pleasure-seeking game, so this more than 80-90% of no pain, no pleasure situation go unnoticed. And that is also amount to be a pain. But the meditation, at least theoretical knowledge, going to give a third option. If you are really sharp to see pain as pain and pleasure as pleasure, and eliminate them, ultimately you will see most of the time you can't categorize the event or the phenomena as pain or pleasure, that means pain pleasure situation or neutral, but we, due to our ignorance, we skip it. We are jumping from pain to pain, or pleasure to pleasure, or pain to pleasure, or pleasure to pain, but we bypass this no pain, no pleasure situation. But Buddha says that is the middle path. That is the way out. That is the key. Without knowing that, you will be ever engaged in pleasure, for the pursuit of pleasure, hating the pain, but never mind. But what is happening, you miss the bus. So after you mastering the materialistic part and see the no breath, but still you are mindful and be there, you will understand that time you feel awkward, you feel imbalanced, you feel not comfortable because you are in a no pain, no pleasure situation. But you don't recognize it. The moment you recognize, it will be an additional factor for your equilibrium. And you are balancing the situation, and slowly, slowly, you will gain the ground. And one day, you will understand that now only you are at real your home. As far as you are in pleasure-seeking, pursuit of pleasure, it's a kind of abnormality backed by the undermining tendency of the desire. Raga Anusaya. As far as you are hating this painful situation, your mind is not at home. It is under the influence of the undermining tendency of hatred, Dosa Anusaya. So being that is the situation. Still, the day you understand, most of the time I am in the neutral feeling, and if it is the middle part, that you will understand by mere understanding of it, by realizing, by adjusting your value system, you gain huge amount of neutral kind of pleasure. It is free of charge. That is what the Buddha says, that is free of charge. The pleasure and pain, sometimes you may get it, but very expensive. And not only that, it's going to give a lot of side effects. But this one is free of charge, but the thing is, our ignorance never allow us to be open to that situation. So therefore, this is you gain by not exerting effort. So therefore, as far as the energy aspect is concerned, the early part of your meditation demanding high amount of energy. But when you are changing or shifting into this immaterial part, your energy must be backed more and more with the wisdom. That is kind of synchronization. That's kind of acclimatization into the new situation. And of course it is after a successful part of materiality as a meditation. And then when you come up to that level, the way you understand it, how to synchronize it, you will see each and every human being have that opportunity. But without knowing that, they only expect for pursuit of pleasure, so therefore they are in an imbalanced kind of effort, so therefore their life becomes crooked, life becomes paralyzed. Even the pleasure, they ask if they are successful. But understand the no pain, no pleasure situation, you will, if you wish to be there, if you wish to continue with, only thing is, don't add any will, don't add any intentions, just let it run in autopiloting way. I think that is the most difficult thing for industrious world. Because we have agitated our mind, we have agitated our body throughout the life, so therefore whenever this immaterial pressure happens, either you challenge it or you feel awkward. So therefore you have to acclimatize slowly. When it is doing, it is not only influencing your mind in sitting meditation, even in the day-to-day activities also, you have to be very vigilant. You have to be very diligent and not to over-exert. Or in the sense, not to trouble, still troubles, troubles you. So that is how, whenever you go to that kind of beginning part of the material kind of meditation, when you come out from that also, then you can understand what is the kind of posture is good for you, what's the kind of food, what's the kind of climate, what's the kind of friends, what is the kind of dhamma you have to associate. Because now only the calibration, the fine-tuning is going to happen. So therefore this part you have to do very patiently and very slowly. Whenever someone go up to that sphere, their tendency is to accelerate it, to get it quickly. So that's a disease. That you have to do very slowly, and therefore my teacher when he is explaining this, he says, if you feel that you can experience the gross kind of breathing at the beginning, and when the conditions are there, the breathing becomes subtle and go to the subtlest position, and you are daily, you go to this inner space, you go to this total whole body experience, what you have to do is, you have to regularize your sitting and walking timetable so that it becomes part and parcel of your daily routine. Something like eating, something like sleeping, something like bathing, or all the kind of thing, and then make it a daily habit, and then you develop an acquaintance with that. And when it is happening, when balance is happening, the underestimation or overestimation is a very sarcastic thing I would say. Everyone, I would say, falling either into this one, either overestimation or underestimation. Even the teacher can't understand because this experience, unless otherwise a telepathic method, no one can understand. So therefore, you have to be sure to the point, as much as possible, if possible, discuss with the senior person or the advanced meditator, and try not to exaggerate it.
Suckless breath is no breath.
That is what you feel, but ultimately you feel, you come to understand the subtlety is due to your perception. Your perception is not so sharp. If there is no breath, you have to die. It is not happening. The breath is going on. But you can't feel it. That once you accepted it, everything happening in the autopiloting way, so even the mind says it is no breath, no problem. If the mind says there is a kind of a breath, only you can't discriminate in that way of breathing, that I would say it is a good state. You can't discriminate in and out, and but the breath is there. So that is what really happens. And once that you come up to that level, again, still, the breath becomes breath and the mind and the meditation go to deep, deep layers. When you go there more and more, only the situation is, everything is mindless. There is no verifiable points. Unless otherwise you are early part of your the meditation and the mindfulness. So therefore, you find there is no one to help you, unless otherwise your own experience. So, repetitive application, regular application, make the situation more familiar. And it's a in the sense, a risky thing. Therefore, no one can guarantee you are definitely going to give a security, going to give a definitely assured path. But as far as you can go little by little, you are assured. There was one of my teachers, he one day has taken some drugs. And he sees this state and the drug addicted situation has something like this. Once you, I have never taken drugs, so I can't say yes or no. But when you go up to that level, you come to an ecstasy, and whole material world is finished, and you are in the balance. So then he has explored it. He says that amount of ecstasy you get under the drug's influence, it depends on the concentration of the drugs. And next day to go up to that level, you have to get a bigger dose. And therefore, it's an addiction is there. But this one, you get free of charge. And if you wish, you can come to the world and understand the breathing, the body, the faculties and the senses. But whenever you the situations are okay, you can go into the deep layers, that is called, the mind is rather centralized, it is not associating the peripheral senses and sensuous impingements. It can go there, but still, what is the point is, there is some kind of an equilibrium where you can put everything into autopilot. So that you can say, unless otherwise you develop fear or sleepiness or agitated mind, that then your equilibrium will be shaken. But that won't make any permanent damage. Again, you can say, by going with preparedness, you can get that equilibrium. And when you go there, you find a kind of a satisfaction, kind of a fulfillment you are going to happen without relating to your eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. Without getting any kind of a visual objects, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensation or thinking, that can happen. But that is only possible whenever the mind is at the balance. But sometimes, otherwise, mind feel uncomfortable in this balance situation and it either fall into sleep or entertain in doubts or fear can happen. So, in the discussions, what we do is, we are sharing each other. When I go to this much of meditation, I feel this, I feel that. And in the discussion, you can rectify most of the things. You don't take the advanced kind of exercise or training, because due to some of lacking, your faith is sometimes may be lacking, the energy aspect may be lacking, or mindfulness, or concentration, or wisdom, the day it becomes equal, then only the advancement can happen. So therefore, the teacher, when he is going to figure out the situation, he says, when you come up to that inner space, mind is not associating the past, and therefore no regret, that the concentration is intact. Mind is not associating the future, no excitement, and the concentration intact. In other words, whenever under these circumstances also, if the mind is going to associate with the past memories, what is definitely going to happen is the remorse and regret. If the mind is going to associate the future, what is happening is the excitement and shaking of the concentration. Sometimes the mind gets attached to this situation, and then the desire can happen and the shaking can happen. Sometimes you hate this situation, telling that no one to talk, you are solid, you are cornered, outcasted, you are in the danger light. Then again, the fear arises. And sometimes you become over-enthusiastic, doubt happens. You become very slimy, sleepiness can happen. So these are the traps. So by going through them, when and where they come, if you can note it, you can experience such a situation where the faith, the energy, the concentration, the mindfulness and wisdom come intact with balance. And that under situation itself, the faith must have hand to hand with wisdom. Too much of faith will undermine the wisdom. Too much of wisdom will undermine the faith. That's the balance. And the concentration and the energy also go in hand to hand. The mindfulness must be the leading character. And no, even one or two days, if you are going to experience this, by applying again and again, experiencing again and again, seasoning again and again, only you gain the ground.
Mindfulness balance.
Mindfulness is the only thing, have no partner, and it is controlling and balancing whether wisdom and the faith is in the balance, whether the concentration and the energy is in the balance. So mindfulness taking the leadership, just like your five fingers, mindfulness is the middle finger, it's the longest and the biggest. The faith is the small finger, and the wisdom is the thumb. And the two other fingers representing the energy and the concentration. So whenever everyone come into the one pointedness, coming into the one purpose, then you feel kind of a frictionless path. And that you can't claim it is yours. It's a cause and effect relationship. Whenever these factors come into proper one-pointedness, you feel like you are taken for a ride. Otherwise, you have to not to underestimate, but to understand what is imbalance, what is abnormality, and there you have to observe it as is someone else's phenomenon. Even such a thing happen, if you are not get excited, you can adjust it and come back to the equilibrium. And that is the way you develop to your trial and error method, and that takes longer time. But according to my little experience, what I can see is those who are in this balance always try to accelerate. They want to get a quick results, that itself is distorting the balance. So there you have to be patient, knowing that now I am not working in the materialistic part, I have mastered it. Now in the immaterial part, sometimes you feel this kind of changes in the feelings, and that is in the Satipatthana Sutta, as a topic, what I suggested, the Buddha says, Sukham Vavesam Vediyamano Sukham Vedana Vediyamiti Pajanati. Sometimes you feel hilarious, good joyful feeling, and there you have to understand it is as if the subject matter, that is someone else, this is the sukha vedana, or pleasurable feeling. I am now feeling a pleasurable feeling, but definitely it has to backfit the idea. When it is finishing it off, thus the pain will come. Whenever the pleasurable feelings are there, always the undermining tendency of desire is there. So therefore, unless otherwise you see them as an external thing, you can't have a proper understanding about that. So if you are going to be happy with the pleasurable feeling, you are not going to get the due treatment, due dhamma, and whenever the painful feeling happens, you have to be, and on top of that, no pain, no pleasure situation happen, verily you have to understand it. And in the day-to-day activities, it's very complicated, but even in the same principle, as and when you see a visual object, either desire or the other part otherwise will arise. Chakkunaru pandisa uppajyati manapam, uppajyati amanapam, uppajyati manapam. Very rarely we continue to see a neutral object. If it is pleasurable, we will see again and again, and the attachment arises. If it is unpleasure, then still we see again and again, more and more the unpleasurable situation arises. There I would invite you to investigate the visual object. That impingement is something coming out to your sensitivity of your eye. As and when it happens, the mind produces a desire or undesirable situation. If you can't separate them out, what is coming from out to in and what is coming from in to out, you will get a mixed idea, thinking that very visual object has its own desire and undesirable situation. This is what called the ignorance. The desirability or undesirability depends upon your perception. The visual object itself don't have that kind of definements. So therefore, as you are as in the sitting meditation in the Anapanasati, you try to discriminate what is coming in as the in-breath and what is going out as the out-breath, and you try to see the discrimination. That is exactly the same way, in very subtle way, as and when you see something, desire arises, you have to say visual object is something coming from out to in, the desire is something you project into the visual object, then only seeing happens. The most tricky thing is, if the thing is not titillating, if the visual object is no desirable, no undesirable, even if you see that, never go to your memory. That won't make any history. History make out of the pressure of pain. The day you are going to see it, you will understand that is the time you understand not the visual object, how the eye is working. And when you are in a film hall, for example, in the old fashion, and you are looking at the screen, and you can see when the light ray, the beam come and hit on the screen, you can see the male, females, and all the scenery. But if you look behind and see how this beam comes, it is coming from something like a 1 square inch like of a beam, and is by traveling long way only it become a 35 millimeter or whatever, maybe a big screen. But if you look at the small beam of 1 square inch like, and there is some kind of a changes, but you can't recognize whether it's a male or female or tree or whatever. And if you know the projector, behind that only there is the celluloid. And behind that is eternal being. And in between these two, there's a kind of a cam. At a time it gives a darkness, at a time it gives a light. That is how the film becomes animated. But if you really see the projector, 50% of the time it projects darkness, 50% of the time it projects light. But if you are looking at the silver screen, you never see any darkness. You see the continuity of the light. Therefore, that means you are just looking at the film, but you are not aware of what is happening at the projector. So much so you can entertain the film. But if you are going to think about how the projector is projecting these things, it is projecting darkness and lightness and the darkness and the lightness. In between, the celluloid is changing. The moment if you are going to understand the projector, you can't entertain the film. Exactly the way the moment you understand the seeing process, your seeing object will be shaded off. If you are bogged down in seeing process, seeing object, you will never understand seeing business, seeing operation. So therefore you are always outward. In the meditation it is asking, yes, you are always outwardly, but you are the only person who has developed mindfulness, the concentration to see the seeing operation, how the visual object comes, strike on the sensitivity of your eye, and then how the likings and disliking arises. If you are not sharp enough, you will say it is coming from the visual object, but it is not the case. It is happening due to your perception. So once you detect this liking and disliking or desire and undesirable situation in the sitting meditation, same thing you can apply while you are seeing, while you are hearing, while you are touching, all the kind of things happen. Exactly the same thing happened by Buddha, with his omniscient knowledge. He says, don't start with seeing business because it is very tricky. And then hearing, and then smelling, then the touching. The easiest point is the contact, the body level, the materiality. That is why you have to develop the mindfulness for body as such, kayana pasivirati, and we develop mindfulness and the skill only, you can be aware of this, how the pressure and pain arises within the sitting conditions. And this can be further experimented in walking meditation. You can clearly see when the good walking meditation happens, as far as you are walking in the middle, you can fairly maintain the mindfulness. But when you go to the end and turning, often mind is jumping out to see things, hear, smell, all the kind of things, your mindfulness will be shaken. But again, when you are coming back walking few steps, again the mindfulness may set in. But when you go to the further in that, when you are turning, again that your mindfulness becomes vulnerable and seeing can happen. Your mind can be scattered and wander off to the sea and smelling and hearing. So being that given, what you have to do is, as you reach the turning point, you have to go prepared. You have to understand, I have a certain amount of mindfulness now. How can I maintain this mindfulness while turning without scattering off? There only you can say, if you somehow or the other hate the continuous feeling of left leg and the right leg, mind is waiting to take a chance to go into seeing, go into hearing, go into other kind of things. And therefore easily you forego your right leg and the left leg, and mind take up a hand and go for seeing. And their mindfulness go, or six go waste. But if you go prepared, you can see how tricky the mind is. Whenever you give a monotonous kind of object, it sometimes do it, adhere to it, but no much of liking. The boredom is there. The monotony is there. So therefore under such circumstances, it is waiting to go for variety entertainment. So therefore more than in sitting meditation, in the walking meditation, you get the higher challenges. But if you go prepared, if you have a fair amount of mindfulness, I would say the walking meditation give more dramatic insight experiences than sitting. So it is, therefore, it says that sitting meditation is more conducive for the concentration, and the walking meditation is giving more energy. So the day becomes balanced, they will be reciprocally help each other, specifically when the transition takes place from materiality to mentality, and again mentality to materiality. So therefore, whenever these two master, you become qualified to be mindful in the day-to-day activities. Because in the day-to-day activities, it is multitask. If within a short period, you have to do the time aspect is there. And you are responsible for the other work. So therefore, lesser chances and more pressure. But if you develop this mindfulness from the sitting to walking, and then harden it in the walking meditation, then only you can have a hope in the day-to-day activities. But even then, you must pay high attention to the task that you perform by yourself without having a second person or not socialization. And they are also to establish the mindfulness, specifically in the tricky area. You are supposed to do the things in a little slow manner. Then your mindfulness has a chance to continue, otherwise it will break it off. So therefore, whatever the thing you do in the day-to-day activities as a yogi, must recognize beforehand, make a determination as well to develop the mindfulness and do it in a little slow manner, then you will understand it is possible that in a very thin concentration, not like in the sitting meditation, but anyway, slowly, slowly it is spread. And if you have meditation center atmosphere, the other people also very mindful and do it in a slow manner, mind will be familiar. Otherwise, you will be cornered and you have a little odd, difficult to be mindful. So therefore, whenever we are in the meditation center, we have to make use of the time, maximize the make use of it, and to be mindful in the day-to-day activities, because that is the only thing we can bring back home. When you go home, we have no much of time for sitting, no much time for walking. It is only the similarities between the day-to-day activities at the home and the meditation center has more connections. So therefore, in the meditation centers, many count the success by number of sittings. I would say it is just with respect to the concentration. As far as the mindfulness is concerned, the day-to-day activities is you can't underestimate. Specifically, when you are shifting from materiality to the mentality, day-to-day activities have more dramatic challenge. So therefore, the vipassana yogis are not always trying to figure out future with sitting meditation. They are adjusting their timetable how to maintain the mindfulness in the multitask jobs. And therefore, in the meditation centers also, you can get a glimpse by maintaining the mindfulness in day-to-day activities, and specifically with the experience of changing from the materiality to the mentality, which you first experience in the sitting, and harden it to the walking meditation and go to the day-to-day activities, then only the real change of your, I would rather not say your total personality, you will understand who am I and what are the likings and dislikings of your character, and that will going to give a going to shed the light into the dark part of your mind, or sometimes the Western psychology called the subconscious, and that is the point where the psychological wounds and worries and other things going to heal. So therefore, don't aim at them, but they will be byproducts. But unlucky enough, the Western people are meditating only with this healing objectives.
Once again, psychological wounds will get healed at that time.
Healed in a passive way. Don't do it at aiming, then you will be putting the cart before the horse. That is what happened in the Western countries now, because of the market value of the meditation. But if you be patient enough to just to get the mindfulness established along these three methods, sitting, walking and day-to-day, definitely you are the one to get the profound experience is time to come. Thank you very much for this.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.